This is the first hit of the summer. The song is appropriately called It's Hot in Here by Nelly. In 1966, the summer sounded like this. Paperback writer. Yes, sir, oh, madam, will you read my book? It took me years to write. Will you take a look? It's based on a novel by a man named Lear, and I need a job, so I want to be a paperback writer. That was the Beatles, and it was their 12th American number one song. If Phil Spector had had his way, the summer of 1966 might have sounded very different. Phil Spector was one of the most successful record producers of the 1960s. He enjoyed a long string of hit songs, including Be My Baby by the Ronettes and the Righteous Brothers' You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling. Spector's sonic signature was his orchestral wall of sound. That wall of sound transformed everyday teen laments into three-minute symphonies. Storyteller Mitch Myers encountered Phil Spector's legacy in the most unlikely circumstance and adds one more perspective to the producer's mythic status.
I met this guy in a Los Angeles bar recently. He was repairing the tavern's jukebox and said his friends called him Harvey the K. Harvey told me that he used to be a studio musician and had played on some recording sessions in the 1960s. Wow, I said. That sounds exciting. What instrument did you play? Glockenspiel. Glockenspiel? Man, you must have played on some pretty heavy sessions. The repairman grew stern. He gave the jukebox an elbow, Fonzie style, and said, "Do you remember River Deep, Mountain High, produced by Phil Spector?" "Sure," I said. "Ike and Tina Turner recorded that back in 1966. Harvey laughed. "You're half right, kid. Now listen to this. When I was a little girl, I had a rag doll. Only doll I ever owned." Then Harvey said, Phil Spector was already a hotshot producer when he first saw Ike and Tina Turner perform in L.A. They weren't stars at that point, just another hardcore rhythm and blues act. But when Phil was producing, it didn't matter who was singing. He'd pick the groups, give them their songs, and direct their every move in the studio. By 1966, Phil even had his own record label, but the hits weren't coming like they used to. So, in a bold move, Phil offered to buy out Ike and Tina's recording contract for $20,000, just so he could have Tina record one song. But there was a catch. Ike Turner isn't allowed anywhere near the studio. Phil just wants Tina. Before you know it, Tina's rehearsing at Spector's mansion. Just the two of them with no Ike in sight. Phil's teaching her this song about love and devotion that he'd written with Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry, old pals from the Brill Building in Manhattan. It was a strange tune with three separate parts cobbled together, but Phil already had the finished sound in his head and he knew exactly what he wanted. Anyway, Phil got us all together to record River Deep, Mountain High. It was a huge Hollywood party with more than 20 musicians crammed into Gold Star Studio, with all sorts of other people hanging out. I remember Brian Wilson watching Phil Spector the whole time, and Mick Jagger walking in and out of the control booth. Would you believe Dennis Hopper was there too, taking pictures? It was like a rock and roll zoo. You see, Phil was taking his famous wall of sound to a whole new level.
Ah!
It was positively bombastic, with four guitarists, four bassists, and three keyboards, all repeating this arrangement, written by Jack Nitzsche. They fussed relentlessly with the sound that day, and Phil had his engineer, Larry Levine, crank up the echo beyond anything I'd ever heard. We were falling all over each other in the studio, but the sound was huge. There were two drummers, two percussionists, saxophones, trumpets, and trombones. Phil recorded the whole thing in mono, too. He mixed the music onto a single channel until all of the instruments were reverberating into one giant roar. They tried recording Tina's vocal that day, but she just wasn't prepared for the total Spector experience. She ended up rehearsing for another week before singing her part. For that session, hardly anyone was in the studio. And Phil kept making Tina sing the song over and over until she sweated right through her blouse. Finally, Tina said, "Okay, Phil, one more time." Then she pulled off her shirt, stood there in her bra, and just nailed it. I mean, she matched Phil's production punch for punch. It was majestic. Everybody figured River Deep was headed straight for number one, but a funny thing happened. The record bombed. And Phil took it real hard, too. He became reclusive and hardly produced anything for about 3 years. Harvey the K pushed the jukebox back up against the wall and told me he was late for his next stop. As he was leaving, I noticed a button on his jacket that read, "Back to Mono." Then he was gone. I was so taken with Harvey's story that I contacted the American Federation of Musicians, Local Union 47 on Vine Street in Hollywood. Sure enough, they had a contract listing for a recording session using 23 musicians on March 7, 1966. The song's working title was listed as River Deep. Funny thing is, nobody named Harvey was listed on that session. And not only that, there was absolutely no sign of anybody playing a glockenspiel.
Mitch Myers is a storyteller and historian in Chicago.